Good morning, Samantha.
Good morning.
Thanks very much for joining me. Now, firstly, can you clarify exactly what it means when it's said that Adani have given themselves the green light?
It appears that the Adani board has approved the actual go-ahead internally. However, there's a $3.3 billion funding shortage, including, you know, whether the government is going to go ahead with its North Australian facility funding of the estimated $1.1 billion railway that needs to be approved. So what we seem to have here is a situation where Adani is publicly stating that it wishes to proceed. It has the resource titles issued. It has lodged its environmental impact assessment, and it obviously is yet to finalise its funding. So that's the major concern at this stage. And the question that we need to consider is who is actually going to be funding this, as so many domestic and international banks have indicated that that it's untenable and they won't proceed with funding a mine like this, given the declining market in thermal coal.
And I understand as well as that the coal that's going to be mined isn't necessarily going to be high-grade coal either.
No, that's right. It's likely that it will have a high ash content, probably up to about 26%, which is quite a dirty coal. It's low-quality coal. Its market, the predicted market, is India. But the interesting thing there is that they've just released, of course, an enormous renewable energy plan, which will involve substantial divestment away from thermal coal. So the future for an Indian market is quite shaky. You know, I mean, markets are clearly predicated by climate facts, and, you know, the world is moving away from coal as an energy resource.
Mm. Well, back to the government and Queensland, I suppose, because I want to look at the coal that's there being owned by the Queensland government, but it's under public resource law. Are you able to unpack a little bit about what this means and what the ownership of the coal means?
Yes, of course. Australia has a public resource framework in this respect. I mean, a lot of countries across the world have this. And so basically what that means is that subsurface resources like coal have been vested in the government pursuant to legislation. So previously, anything that existed in the ground would have belonged to the private landowners, but that's now been divested away by vesting provisions in legislation. And effectively what that means is that the state governments own the coal, but they own the coal as public owners. And so what that means is they have a responsibility to look after the public interest in exploiting those resources. So it's very important in determining whether or not to issue resource titles and in determining, you know, how the environmental impact assessments should be analysed, to take account of what public interest means in the context of, obviously, climate change, in the context of a coal mine so vast and so close to the Great Barrier Reef, given the concerns, of course, associated with global warming there. So I think what we're actually seeing is potentially a failure to give due regard to the public interest mandate.
Well, yeah, with something like this, how is public interest measured? I mean, something like the Great Barrier Reef, for instance, seems to be vitally important to Queensland, not just as a biological on a biological level, but also for tourism. I'd presume be the biggest tourist attraction of all of Queensland. So how is public interest in something like this being measured, or is it being circumvented?
Well, that's the question. You know, I mean, it seems to be short-term politics here. And the question is, are they really evaluating public interest? I mean, public interest here, most Australians do not want to see one of the biggest coal mines in the world progressing in an area that's adjacent to our national treasure. I mean, that is just unbelievable, particularly given the bleaching effect that's already occurred. So the climate impact is, you know, just heartbreaking. Then there's the economics of it, which are absolutely shaky. I mean, it's just hard to understand how short-term economics, I mean, because they're suggesting that the mine is going to generate jobs, but what they need to offset against that sort of short-term perspective is the long-term impact upon the whole region. I mean, it's a $1 trillion asset, and $6 billion of tourism annually could potentially be impacted given the possible effects if the actual mine does get funded and goes ahead and we have, you know, global warming issues, not to mention all sorts of other concerns associated with potential pollution and stranded assets, et cetera, et cetera. So these longer-term cumulative impacts need to be taken into account in determining public interest, and they are not.
If you've just joined us this morning, we're speaking right now with Samantha Hepburn, Director of the Centre for Energy and Natural Resources Law at Deakin Law School, about the Indian mining company Adani's plans to go ahead with their Carmichael coal mine in Queensland. Now, Samantha, we've spoken a little bit about the environmental impacts. Now, Adani says they've done their environmental impact statements and done the assessments. What sort of environmental laws and agreements did the project need to take into consideration before the mining is, you know, able to start?
Okay, well, we have state and national environmental legislation that needs to be assessed. The project is close to a World Heritage Area, so which means that it potentially triggers a matter of national environmental significance. So strong environmental assessment needs to be carried out, and unfortunately at the moment there's a lack of clarity as to what relevance climate impact has within our national environmental legislation. However, it's very clear that if you are developing a project which has enormous capability of impacting not just environmental but also social and economic development within the region, then that is something that has to be taken into account at the national level. There's also indirect reference within the national environmental legislation to principles of international ecological sustainability. And so things like a precautionary principle, whereby you don't proceed with a project if there is a risk of irreversible environmental damage. And that is just an absolute established principle that appears to have been disregarded in this process.
Mm. Well, I understand there's other factors there as well, like Australia's commitment to the Paris Agreement. But I do want to look into a more positive light, I suppose, with my final question for you. Now, the project has a lot of factors which still need to be cleared up before it can go ahead. So it's not necessarily confirmed to be going ahead at this point. What sort of prospects do we, the people, I suppose, the Australian public and the people in Queensland have? As you mentioned, there is a lot of people who aren't on board with it. I'm yet to meet anybody who is at all supportive of the Adani project. What sort of prospects are there for not seeing the mine go ahead?
Okay, well, we have to, I mean, within the confines of the rule of law says that the state and federal government can only exploit a public resource if it's in the public interest. Is it in the public interest? What is the public interest? Where is the evidence that they have taken this into account? I mean, given the fact, and let's recap on this, that if we are to stay within 2 degrees, we've got 50% chance of staying within 2 degrees, by 2050, 90% of Australia's fossil fuels must stay in the ground. What are we doing?
It's a scary time. Samantha, thanks so much for joining me this morning to explore some of the ins and outs of this. And it is comforting a little bit to know that it isn't all going ahead right now at this stage.
My pleasure.